Welcome to B2B Commerce Corner. Commerce Corner is a sub-series of the E-Commerce Edge podcast discussing all things B2B commerce through the lens of agencies, consultants, merchants, and more. Enjoy.
Jason, welcome to the pod. How are you and where are you?
Mate, it's so good to be here. You know, we talked about doing this for a while now, and we've known each other online, I think, through LinkedIn for 4 or 5 years now, but we never managed to make our schedules sync up to actually make a conversation happen. So I'm really, really looking forward to this. I'm currently in Puebla, Mexico, which is where my wife and I have recently settled after a year of traveling around Mexico, deciding where we wanted to put down some roots here. We settled on Puebla and we're loving it so far.
Nice. We were talking just off air about the what sounds like perfect weather. What else about Puebla was one of the deciding factors? And where exactly is it?
So it's 2 hours southeast of Mexico City, and it's about 5 hours west of Veracruz. It's in the what's known as the Central Plateau, and the Central Plateau all sits at around that 2,000 meter elevation mark, which keeps it much, much cooler than the coastal regions of Mexico. We traveled around Mexico all of last year trying to find where home or felt like a place could be home. And Puebla was not even originally on our short list. We were driving between Mexico City and Oaxaca was on our short list. And we stayed one night in Puebla. And as we were leaving the city, my wife and I went to lunch together and just literally at the same exact moment looked at each other and said, "This feels like a place we could call home."
That's amazing. I want to get back to Mexico and Latin America in a little bit more detail because I think it's a really interesting spot and I think you'd be a really interesting person to talk to about it, not least because you live there. But the kind of general topic of the discussion today is like whether B2B is a big opportunity. Now, my sense is, one, you're a very good person to answer that question. Two, it seems to be touted that it is, but I want to deep dive on that. But I want to do and start with a bit of a primer. Like, what led you to the world of e-com?
Yeah, I've been in e-com. This is my 24th year in e-com. So, you know, it's been a long, long time for me spent in this space. And I kind of fell into it. I think, you know, even on my own podcast, when I interview people, there's no two stories that are the same. No one takes the same path. You know, in a lot of industries, banking or finance or insurance or maybe even the trades, people take a lot of similar routes into those industries. E-com is not that way, you know, and I think like many people, I fell into it. I knew even before I ever came into agency life or, you know, worked professionally in e-com, I could kind of see the writing on the wall in terms of this is going to be big. I don't quite know how big this internet thing's going to be, but I know it's going to be big. And I started out as a BDM, a business development manager for this agency, but I quickly evolved my role into more of a digital marketing focused role and delivering digital marketing services to clients, helping with digital strategy, helping them with channel mix. This agency also had one of the very first SaaS e-commerce platforms. We didn't even call it SaaS back then. It was just hosted by us on our own infrastructure because we were also a hosting provider, a managed hosting provider. It was really just a fortuitous series of events that caused me to fall into that. Then I was like, man, I'm doing all this work for people, helping them build their businesses. And I was like, man, I'd really like to do something for myself. So my business partner and I, he was in the electronic sourcing space. He was working for Tate Electronics and Sourcing. And so he had his finger in that world. I had my finger in the e-commerce and digital world. And we said, why don't we put our heads together and start our own e-commerce brand? And we did. So we started flashcards.co.nz. We were the first in New Zealand to sell digital memory cards as a pure play e-commerce business. And that's how I got my start in the industry. And I really have never looked back. So my business partner and I at the time, within a year and a half, we had both quit our jobs. We're working in this e-commerce brand full time. And that's how I got my start and just really haven't looked back.
And at what point did you kind of switch gears to focus purely on kind of B2B and you're more of a consultant now? Like at what point, obviously that I can see the pedigree, I can see the journey kind of happening, but when did that become like more of a thing?
That really happened over the last, say, 5 years, 6 years. I just found that when I was working with B2B brands, I was working with people that were very practical because of that real technical and operational bent. In the B2B world, I always had a deep affinity for B2B. And I saw it very much as a blue ocean opportunity. You know, when I first started out, I was more of a generic e-commerce consultant. And then I decided, geez, this is so competitive. There's hardly anyone out here that's a B2B specialist, like deep, deep B2B specialist. And I saw that very much as a blue ocean opportunity. And I don't just consult on the e-commerce front end. I consult on the entire commerce stack. It's ERP, it's CRM, it's CDP, it's PIM, it's POS, it's system integration, OMS, IMS, WMS. So it's the whole stack, and you have to understand the entire commerce stack if you're going to consult in the B2B world. And I just feel super lucky that that was my background.
Nice. Well, I think maybe that last question has answered the whether there's a big opportunity in B2B, but I think we should explore it a little bit further. I'm curious about, you've touched on there a couple of times where I look at it as kind of two profiles. You have B2B to C potentially, where there's like a traditional B2B player and they might be going direct to consumer or exploiting that channel. Leveraging, much better way of looking at it. And then there's the other profile, which you talked about, which is primarily direct to consumer first or digital first, and they are looking at a B2B channel. Is that, firstly, how you look at it? And then secondly, maybe the B2B profile is more technical and the other is more designy. But are those two worlds converging? I feel that they might be in some ways. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, a huge percentage of my customer base are D2C brands that want to establish strategic wholesale channels and don't know how to do it. They've nailed the D2C thing, or they've kind of mostly nailed the D2C thing. They're really design-led. They're really marketing-led. They're really brand-led. They've got really strong direct routes to market, whether that involves potentially even physical retail stores in addition to a really strong online presence. But they just have no idea about how to do B2B digital customer acquisition. They really don't know how to do that. Maybe the 99% of the time, if they're a D2C brand, they're running Shopify and they're going, geez, you know, can we do this on our existing D2C storefront? Can we just add some B2B functionality and boom, we're up and running? You know, how do we do digital customer acquisition? So they've just got a whole ton of questions. They know they need to de-risk their business. They know that digital customer acquisition through D2C is sky high cost, sky high complexity. It's rising. And they realize that no matter how much money and effort they spend on digital customer acquisition, they, without strategic wholesale channels, they will never be able to get in front of every single potential customer of their products. They know that. Mm-hmm. So whether they've got a store chain in addition to their digital channels, whatever, they will never be able to, because there are certain pockets of customers that will only buy off of certain suppliers in certain regions. They have their favorite retailers. They've got their favorite wholesale suppliers. And then they're, in many cases, they don't just want to do B2B e-commerce better or do it first, but they also want to establish a D2C channel to de-risk their businesses as well. And so that's kind of, so I don't work exclusively with B2B e-commerce brands or brands that want to do B2B e-commerce. Sometimes they're wanting to establish D2C channels as well. So there are those pockets.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so it, at this point in time, looking sort of further out into 2024, you don't see a significant sort of weight on either of those profiles. There is kind of even distribution in terms of opportunity.
100%. And really, I see D2C and B2C as very different beasts, right? D2C brands are manufacturers, wholesalers, and distributors selling directly to end customers versus B2C, which are usually just retail aggregators and they're selling other people's stuff, right? And so there's natural synergy and overlap between D2C and B2B. It is much, much easier for a D2C brand to add a wholesale channel or a B2B brand to add a D2C channel. It's much, much easier for them to do that than it is for B2C brand to try to establish a wholesale channel when they are just one of many suppliers of those exact same goods, those exact same SKUs. Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, to be fair, it is pretty rare that a B2C brand wouldn't have some house brands, wouldn't have some products that they consider their own. You know, there's a lot of brands that overlap in the sense that they're D2C and they're B2C, or they're D2C and they've dabbled in B2B. You know, most of the D2C brands that come to me and say, look, we need to establish a strategic wholesale e-commerce channel. The reason that they've come to that conclusion is because they've already got some B2B buyers coming through their traditional D2C website that, okay, they give a coupon code to for unit buying. And they're going, hey, this seems like an opportunity that we're not really capitalizing on in a significant way. And they need to be able to differentiate their wholesale channel performance with their D2C channel performance. And when it's all coming through the same channel, they can't do that. They can't treat that cohort of customers differently. Okay, maybe they can if they've got a marketing automation platform and they can do segmentation based on unit volumes, based on annual spend, based on other things. Maybe they can segment their wholesale customers out as best they can, but it's just really hard to really segment out your channel performance across wholesale versus D2C if you don't have a dedicated wholesale channel. That's just the reality of it. And so it's really difficult to differentiate that experience substantially enough for it to become a major revenue driver for your business, because the needs of a B2B buyer are so very different to a traditional D2C buyer that you really need to differentiate those experiences very heavily.
And how does marketplaces fit into that kind of, I suppose, broad topic there? How do you think about it when you're talking to your clients? Do you talk about it as in there's a B2B umbrella and one of those might, you know, it's a wholesale channel, it's a retail channel, and then it's marketplaces, or is it a separate thing? How do you think about it? And then I'm curious, like, what do you see as marketplace winners and maybe losers in 2024?
Yeah, great question. The world of dedicated B2B vertical specific marketplaces is absolutely exploding. You know, DC360 says, I think by the end of 2024, they estimate that there's going to be about 1,000 B2B dedicated marketplaces worldwide, right? I forget what the exact statistic is, but it's around that. And so I know that the number and variety of B2B marketplaces is just going nuts. Amazon is pouring so much time and effort into Amazon Business. They're very clear, especially in Europe. They've talked very heavily about how they're looking to expand their supplier base for Amazon Business in Europe because they can't service all B2B categories currently because they don't have enough suppliers in their database versus, you know, obviously their D2C products. Whether it's marketplace or website or physical retail, it doesn't matter. B2B is about a decade behind where B2C and D2C are. And so that means that they're about a decade behind and they're doing a lot of catch up in the marketplace space. But what's cool is not only are a lot of B2B brands realizing there's lots of great B2B marketplaces already out there to list our products on that have high demand, and this is another digital route to market for us, but we can become a marketplace because it's extremely rare. In fact, I'm not sure if I've ever seen it where a B2B manufacturer, it just sells their own products, right? In fact, every single manufacturer that I work with is also a distributor and a wholesaler of other products. So in other words, they are a solution provider. They are not just a component supplier. And as a result of that, it makes sense in a lot of cases for those brands to become a marketplace in their own right. Because it's very difficult, you know, in the B2B world, some of these catalogs are 1, 2, 3 million SKUs. We're not talking 5 SKUs, 10 SKUs, 20 SKUs, right? We're talking hundreds of that, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and in some cases, millions of SKUs. And so in that world, if they have to onboard those products, if they have to warehouse those products, if they have to have those products in the ERP to be able to sell them, it's a very capital intensive business because in the B2B world, most of those products are very expensive products. So what a lot of these B2B brands are realizing, we've got the traffic. It takes us 6 months to onboard a new product into our catalog because we've got a queue of products and we've got a queue of suppliers to onboard into our system and price up and source and all that sort of stuff. Well, cool. Why don't we, for our top 20% or top 40% of our products, we will warehouse those, we'll sell those directly, but the rest will build an endless aisle by becoming a marketplace. And so all of our suppliers that we would traditionally have to onboard as a wholesale supplier of products to us, instead, let's let them own all the product information. Let's let them own loading all this information into our PIM and all that sort of stuff. We'll sell it. We'll become the merchant of record and we'll clip the ticket for every sale that goes through our system, but we don't have to have it in our ERP. We don't need to have it in our warehouse. And so I think the marketplace space in B2B is actually much more exciting and dynamic. It's kind of Amazon and then everybody else. Yes, there's Walmart and there's Target and there's all these other marketplaces that are really trying to compete hard against Amazon. And in certain verticals, they're winning. And in Australia, as you know, being Australian, that, you know, Australia is one of the, in fact, in my experience, it's the most over-marketplaced country in the world. I've never seen or interacted with a country that has as many marketplaces per capita as Australia does. It's insane. And yet, despite that, now look at how quickly Amazon has consolidated power in Australia, right? They went from first year, I think it was 200,000 GMV or something like that. Then within, I think, 2 years, it was 2 million. And then it was 200 million, like a couple of years after that. So like their rate of growth was exponential in Australia. And then they finally started shipping to New Zealand. So we know that Amazon and the D2C and B2C space is just an absolute juggernaut that is virtually unstoppable. It's really difficult to outcompete Amazon by being a better Amazon. But in the B2B world, it's much more open slather. It's much more competitive. Amazon doesn't own the B2B marketplace space yet. And I don't know if they ever will, because the needs of specific verticals and categories within B2B are so diverse that I just don't think Amazon is capable of being the expert in everything B2B. I think it's just too hard.
I want to switch gears slightly, and as we round out, start to talk about very briefly Latin America. You're in a good position to give us some insight, given where you reside now. My sense is that given a bit of the geopolitical tensions between, say, the US and China, that Mexico's in an interesting position to be like at the forefront. Offshoring and VW and some other big players are in Mexico. From, I suppose, our world, B2B, e-com. Yeah, what's your take? Are you seeing like loads of opportunity in Mexico or Latin America itself? What are you seeing on the ground there? Or is it still a few years away? What's your general sort of take?
Yeah, look, it's really an interesting thing, because what I'm seeing is online retail is dominated by three major players. It's dominated by Amazon, Mercado Libre, and Coppel. Those are all three marketplaces. Mm-hmm. Now, Coppel's a retailer, and they're like a $10 billion a year retailer here in Mexico. So they're a pretty big retailer. When we look at how Amazon in particular has performed here, they've cracked two things: trust and delivery. Those two things are really critical here in Mexico, because addressing is a mess and a disaster here in Mexico. Security here is through the roof. So actually even being able to get into fraccionamientos and into privadas, so private gated communities, to be able to do deliveries and things like that. Amazon has just absolutely nailed that. And they have a network of private drivers. I think as I've heard, they've kind of got almost like their internal Uber kind of like system that puts jobs out to drivers, and then they can come and pick it up from the warehouse and get it out for delivery. So that they're using local drivers that understand the local market and how to get into specific addresses. And that is a major challenge for anybody who wants to do D2C here. Which carrier do I use that can actually get my goods to my customers at their door? There will be, like, especially in places like Guanajuato, where there are millions of houses built on a hillside. Many of those houses, they've got a pathway address, but they do not have a street address. And then we've got the regulation piece. And I've had a couple of LATAM and Mexican e-commerce specialists on my own podcast. And it's their belief that the B2B e-commerce opportunity is much, much larger here in Mexico than the B2C or D2C opportunity, and will be almost indefinitely because of the way that the private markets are regulated here and how much red tape there is to be able to import products, the red tape involved in setting up an e-commerce store, the red tape and regulation and local sales permits. And there's just, you know, the major marketplaces, they can afford and stomach the red tape of being in business in LATAM. And that's what makes them successful here. But the B2B world, that is much more open slather. That is much less regulated. There's a lot less sort of red tape to get through to be able to be a B2B supplier in this country. And so my major guests and all the major people that I've spoken to believe that the B2B e-commerce opportunity in particular in Mexico is where the opportunity lies. And in fact, I recently had someone who's effectively starting the Alibaba of Mexico. They're actually ex-Alibaba. He's a Mexican guy. He lived in China. He worked in China for Alibaba for multiple years. And there was nothing like it in Mexico. And we have a major challenge on our hands here in Mexico, which is foreign buyers don't know how to work with suppliers and manufacturers here in Mexico because of the language barrier, because of the cultural barrier, et cetera. So there's a lot of companies in the United States and Canada that want to either dual shore and remove their dependence on China and move manufacturing to Mexico in either in a dual shore capacity or a near shore capacity, full stop. But they don't know how to reach out to, they don't know how to find those manufacturers and suppliers in Mexico, or even get quotes or tenders or RFPs from manufacturers in Mexico, and vice versa. A lot of these manufacturers in Mexico don't know how to go out and court North American brands and say, we can make this stuff for you and we can compete with China on price, and we're much closer. So therefore, logistically speaking, we're cheaper and easier to access. What a lot of people don't know is that aerospace manufacturing and vehicle manufacturing are massive in Mexico. Querétaro is one of the largest aerospace manufacturing hubs in the world, right? They manufacture for everybody in Mexico. Motor vehicles, as I mentioned, I think it was off air, VW and Audi have their biggest manufacturing plants outside of Germany based here in Puebla. So high-tech manufacturing is a thing here. It's just that connecting the buyers and the sellers is really difficult because of that language and cultural barrier. And that's what some of these middle people are starting to bridge that gap to make that seamless. So there's a massive business opportunity for that here.
Final question. I want to round out with a final question about AI. And I thought it was interesting what you said at the start of the conversation about seeing the world of e-com kind of before it happened and kind of getting a sense that like, oh, this is going to be a big thing and it kind of happening. Do you feel the same about AI?
I do. I think it's being way overhyped and overvalued in the short term, but I think it's probably going to be undervalued in the long term. By that, I mean that I think most people that have used ChatGPT or Gemini or any of the major AI platforms extensively, it's been very anticlimactic in many respects. It's been amazing and overwhelming in some respects, but it's been massively anticlimactic in other respects, in the sense that I realized that even when I first started using ChatGPT and I was using it, I remember when I was in Guanajuato, I was using it to give me an itinerary of places to take my dog for a walk and everything else. And it told me that there was a dog park that was very close to me. And I said, I wanted suggestions that were within 15 minutes. And it gave me one. And then I looked it up on Google Maps and it was like an hour and a half away or 2 hours away or something. I was like, how can it get this so wrong? Like, how can it be so bad when I could Google search for this, just traditional Google search, and get a much more relevant and much more accurate answer? And so I think it's amazing. I think with coding copilots in particular, I think that large language models are absolutely transformational and will continue to be. I think that Gen AI can be incredible when it comes to being able to use machine vision, for example, to understand what a product is and what it looks like and what its attributes are, and auto-populating information about that product instead of having to have a human do that. To create structured data for e-commerce information. Look, I think AI is incredible. Do not get me wrong. And it will be as transformational as any other technology. I think the previous technology that has been this big is mobile. That's the previous pattern that I saw that literally changed absolutely everything about how we interact with the world and with each other. I think AI is going to be as transformational, if not more so. I think AR, VR are all going to play their transformational parts, but I think it is going to take a lot longer than most people think for it to be good enough for most production environments. There are, and I'm working with a platform vendor right now to help them figure out how and where AI makes sense to inject into their platform and where it doesn't make sense, where I think the market opportunity exists, and helping them get connected up with experts in the space who can help them get AI into their platform, because all their customers are asking for it. This is the challenge. Every platform vendor has customers saying, when are you going to bring AI to the platform? How do you use AI? How's it going to benefit my business? Because the dirty little secret of our industry is 99% of brands out there are not going to bring AI directly into their business. They're not going to do it. They're going to do it via their technology vendors. The technology vendors that know everything about this, from search, merch, personalization, and everything else, that is going to get brought in via their technology vendors. They're not going to go and subscribe to AI as a service from Amazon and then figure out how to weave that into their tech stack. They're not going to do it. And so that's where the tech vendors come into play here. And that's what I'm seeing. That's where the demand is. But these tech vendors, in many instances, they've got to get AI into their platform because it's table stakes now, but they don't necessarily know how or where it makes sense or where it's even needed. And so this is the disconnect. So I think AI, absolutely transformational. I think it's going to take longer to move industries than people are thinking right now because AI has a credibility problem.
I totally agree with you, mate. That was a great way to end the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Mate, I loved this. This was a great chat. Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.